Hi, I'm Marie Crow and welcome to the Green Ball Podcast. I'm delighted to be bringing you the second episode of this new podcast about Irish cricket with an initial focus on the upcoming ICC Men's T20 World Cup, which starts in a matter of days. In this episode, our panel of experts will be looking forward to the Ireland Men's T20 squad fixtures in the tournament and analysing the key matchups. And make sure you stay tuned to the show, as later on, I'll be talking to a very special guest from Abu Dhabi, former Irish captain and Irish coach, Gary Wilson. Gary will be talking about his own experiences in World Cups and the pressure that these competitions bring. Now, let's get started. And I'm delighted to be joined again by Isabel Joyce and Alan Lewis. You're both very, very welcome. It is time to look forward to the tournament proper now. The countdown is well on for the opening game in this World Cup against the Netherlands. Also in the group are Sri Lanka and Namibia. So Isabel, what does success look like for Ireland in this group?
I think there's a couple of things that will mean success for Ireland. One is obviously coming out of the group, and that's by no means a given. It's always difficult to qualify for any stage of a World Cup. But I also think a really interesting one will be how those young players we spoke about in the previous episode, how they do. If we can get one or two or even maybe three of them to get good performances on the world stage at a World Cup event, that would be massive for this team, because you know there's only 13 maybe that will play in a year, or 14, something like that. So if you can get two or three of those players through and feeling confident with good performances going into the next cycle, they're so young, you know, there's the sky's the limit for this group. So I think that's also what could spell success.
Alan, it's a really steep learning curve when you think about it, like the step up that has to be made to that level. And there's an awful lot that goes on, I guess, just maybe around the game as well. And one of the things that has stood out is the fact that they've had to be so flexible and adaptable as well, just given the multiple changes in warm-up matches, times as well, the PNG match start time changed twice within 24 hours. Does these kind of, I suppose, traits that they're learning and just coping skills, does this bode well for what's coming down the line, the fact that they have been so flexible and adaptable?
Well, traditionally we've always had that, and Paul Sterling again alluded to that in our last piece, you know, that a lot of these younger players come in and it's kind of sink or swim because they're playing against the best sides in the world, and that's ultimately what it's about. Now obviously they've got the best of coaching, they've got the best of that around the place. Obviously there's areas of facilities and things, but they're away now, and again they've got the best of facilities when they are away. But they've got the hunger, they've got desire. That's something that has always been shown within younger players in Irish cricket, and I think that's been the strength of us as a brand, as the brand cricket, as these younger players who've been able to deliver on the international stage. So Isabel is right. I think if one or two of these younger players really perform, and again, if we are to qualify, obviously that's the ambition. The ambition of any side at international level will be to qualify for the main event. And as long as we're ready, I think the only thing that kind of, in a sense, a little bit concerns me in these warm-up matches, we don't really seem to know what our best 11 is at the moment. That's what I'm feeling just from the outside. And again, in the areas for me, there's probably 7 or 8 certainties for selection. And then it's a question of the balance of the team from there is to, you know, who's going to bat between Delaney, Dockrell, Tector, as an example. Tector hasn't had a huge amount of time in the warm-up games. So it'll be very interesting to see how that guy's. And alluded to earlier, the form of Andrew Balburnie as our captain, really taking that lead and wanting to do it. Camphor has done it. Maybe, you know, depending on how things go, he might move to 3. I'm not too sure, but I'm just looking at the balance of the team. Rock has got a lot of time, so is he going to usurp Tucker for that spot where Tucker did so well in the ODI against him? Who knows? But, and again, that Adair Young, are we going to go for the Mercurial Adair, or is Craig Young maybe going to get the spot to join Little, who's a certainty for me?
Alan mentioned Camphor there, and he's actually come out and said he's fully fit after his injuries. He can see he's enjoying being out on the park after that summer of rehab. It's good to see him back bowling as well after ankle problems during the summer. So that's a big positive.
He's someone who just took to international cricket incredibly well. He's just the kind of guy that is always in the game. I don't know how those people do it, but you can't keep them out of the game. And that's why he's such a good all-rounder. He's a great guy around the group. And I suppose he was on for a fight to get into the team. He took that challenge and he absolutely grabbed that spot. Middle order, he's bowled really, really well. And so it's exciting for the Irish team that he's back to full fitness. He's really important to the team because without him, the bowling, they'd have to bring in another bowler. I think they probably are one bowler light, to be honest. They're the only team I've seen bowl five bowlers consistently. Usually in T20 cricket, you want at least six, if not seven options. I think they're kind of hoping that maybe George Dockrell might bowl an over, maybe Gareth Delaney. But usually if you have to have 20 overs from five bowlers, someone's going to go. So you need to have someone to turn to. And they haven't done it, unfortunately, so far, Ireland. So they're a little bit stuck for that. So Camphor being able to bat and bowl is huge. That means they might be able to bring in another bowler and try and get him to lengthen their batting lineup. I don't know.
There are so many dilemmas, really, when you think about it. I mean, I wouldn't want to be trying to pick a starting team for an under six match, let alone having to pick one for a World Cup. But look, Alan, one thing that's really positive and that is quite evident from watching these warm-up games is the communication flow between the coaching staff and the batters. It has really been excellent, and you can just see that it helps deal with those tough conditions.
Yeah, we have no concept of what batting in 41 degrees is like. You know, like, I've batted in heat, but not that type of heat. We didn't really play in Dubai at the time I was playing cricket, but it is savagely hot, and Paul Sterling alluded to that. I think as we come down into the middle order, the most important thing is who's going to hit the boundaries, who's going to take the ball over the ropes, because in all the history of T20 cricket, it largely boils down to the side that hits most boundaries. That's ultimately where it stops and finishes in terms from a batting point of view. If Ireland can get themselves to 150, 160 in games, they're going to challenge all the time, I would think. That's largely where we are. And Isabel is right, like, the stretch with five bowlers, one does tend to go. And we've seen even in these warm-up matches, Curtis has had one very good match with the ball, but he's had two where his things have been difficult because he tends to skid on. He's a low, you know, he's a low centre of gravity, so he's hittable. So he's got to be very much on the money from the word go. But he's got big match temperament, and that's exactly what Isabel said. So he's been to the manor born at international level, and obviously that's something that we want to see from maybe one or two others. I look at, like, if Harry Tector, he's got that street fighter ability about him, but he's got to try and increase his strike rate and things like that if he gets into the team. And that's something that is going to be probably at the forefront of everyone's mind in the coaching staff. I agree with Kyle. I think it's going to be really that middle order and how we function. And they're obviously at the top, Kevin and Sterling. We know what we want from them and what is expected. But, you know, it's really going to be in that plus point in the middle order. If we can really perform, it'll be good.
Isabel, on this tour as well, we've seen the wickets have been playing pretty well, but it appears that it's adapting from the nets to playing on different pitches and different grounds that has caused some problems. How difficult is it to adjust to different wickets for most games?
It's really difficult. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's good to have a number like six or seven bowler, because you have to get used to a new bowler, and sometimes it can take two or three balls to get used to them, and suddenly you're facing another bowler. So if the wickets aren't that predictable, it can make it even more difficult. And I think that's been a difference between Ireland and some other teams. But, you know, they've played a good bit of cricket now out there in the heat. Hopefully they've figured out how they can rotate the strike while they are figuring out the conditions. And I think as well that that's possibly something that's we've seen in the scores. It's a little bit easier up top with the new ball. Possibly. Sometimes Sterlo just makes everything look easy. You can't really tell whether he's making it look easy or it is easier early on. But in the middle, it's looked difficult. And I think that's why we haven't seen as many boundaries. So they're going to have to sit down, figure out how they're going to go about it. And sometimes you can be a bit more brave in these kind of games. The difficult part for Ireland is getting to World Cups. That's actually the higher stress. You have to get to them. And then I think that's why we see the best in those competitions from Irish teams, because the stress is off. You know, we hope to qualify. We're kind of expected to qualify because we do so well and punch above our weights so much in the men's side anyway so far. But yeah, it's stress-free. You can see how Sterlo was talking in the previous episode that, you know, they've got here, they've got through this part, they're used to the conditions, and now it's just go out and have fun and see what you can do. And you can be brave in those kind of situations.
There is still a lot on the coach's shoulders, though, a lot to figure out. And a little bit earlier, Gary Wilson was very kind with his time and had a chat to me. And we started by talking about his own World Cup experiences.
Yeah, nothing but fun memories, really. Even the tough matches, I suppose you look back on it and you know you wanted to test yourself against the best in the world. And, you know, we had some really, really good results throughout those 10 years, I guess, from 2009 to 2019 or 16 was our last one, I suppose. So, yeah, it's been great.
So the warm-up games are on right now. How beneficial are they and what kind of things do you learn from them?
Just fine-tuning, really. Definitely really beneficial, especially for us. We haven't had the results we would have wanted in those warm-up games, definitely. Although we probably haven't had our full strength side out yet. The combinations, you know, everyone's got game time, but we whatever combination the coach and the captain decide to go with, come that first game, we're sure it'll stand us in good stead to get the result against Holland that we want. And we do have guys in good form. We have guys in search for some form as well, but you know, looking forward to that first Dutch game and hopefully getting some points on the board.
You mentioned the P word, pressure. It is the big stage. There are going to be so many people following this team, watching on from around the world. How are the players going to be able to cope with the pressure?
Well, this group's had a bit of pressure on them before as well. Like, a lot of this team would have played against England when we beat them in 2020. And then again, when we beat South Africa earlier this year, and then we won the T20 series against Zimbabwe. So it's well used to deal in high pressure games against good quality opposition. Obviously, a World Cup is probably a next level, but I think they can gain confidence through the way they train. And you know, if you're training well and hitting the ball well or executing your skill as a bowler, you know, hopefully whenever it does come to those pressure moments, you've got a sound technique and something to fall back on in the knowledge that you've done everything you could in training.
What's that pressure feel like when you're heading into a major tournament?
Yeah, it's excitement more than anything because, you know, you want to show the rest of the world. We were so used to over the years having a huge amount to prove in World Cups. That was our only time the world got to see Irish cricket, certainly up until about 2015. So, you know, we were excited to show what we could do. And I'm sure this group of players is no different.
And what about when the tournament is looming and you have these kind of few weeks and you're running into the tournament? What's the atmosphere in around the camp generally like? And how do people kind of, I suppose, distract themselves really from what's coming down the track?
Yeah, it's hard. Bubble life is especially, you know, we were hit with another in-room quarantine last night just because we arrived at the first World Cup hotel and we had to get PCR tested again. So we were back to our rooms for another 7 or 8 hours without seeing anyone. It was sort of sprung on us. So bubble life can be tough, but I think the feeling in the group is that everyone's ready to get going for the tournament and just excitement, really, just excited to get going and get started and hopefully get a few good results early.
So the squad has been cut from 18 to 15. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, always tough on the three guys that are going to miss out there, especially, you know, whenever they're traveling reserves, because, you know, the rest of the group wants them to feel a part of it. But, you know, I'm sure they're gutted and rightfully so. But, you know, we can only pick 15. And I feel like we've got our bases really well covered. You know, we've picked an extra spinner than maybe we would have done in the past because of the conditions we expect to face in the Middle East. We've got a good blend of experience and some younger players. I mentioned about Paul Sterling, Kevin O'Brien at the top of the order. But then we've got, you know, a number of guys playing in their first World Cup as well. So, you know, that no fear of youth, I guess, whenever they come in, that should stand them in good stead. But right the way through, I think we've definitely picked the best group of players that are available to us.
What advice would you have for those lads who are playing in the first World Cup?
It's really a bit cliche, but I suppose you have to enjoy it. Like, there's no point going out there heaping too much pressure on yourself and forgetting, you know, before you know it, it'll be gone. Soak up every minute because, you know, you never know when you'll play in your last one. So, I would say just really try and enjoy the atmosphere. It's great that there's going to be crowds in as well. I think that'll help. I think it's meant to be 70% capacity in the stadiums. Or up to 70% capacity. So I think that'll help. Just to go out there and express yourselves and, you know, don't fear any sort of failure. Just hopefully we can get through that first stage.
So you said that you mentioned the Netherlands being the first game and then there is Sri Lanka and Namibia also in that group. How difficult is the task at hand?
It is a difficult task. It definitely is. You know, I think we were definitely in the harder of the two groups. There's no doubt about that. But having said that, you know, as an Irish cricket team, you know, you never take the field expecting anything other than to win. And that'll be no different for this group. I do believe that if we play our best cricket, then we'll be fine and we'll go through. But, you know, if we're not at 100%, then we'll find it difficult because those other three teams are all good teams in their own right. And they've got some exciting players. But I guess we can just control what we're doing. And, you know, the preparation that we've had this World Cup, we've been here, what, 14, 15 days now in total, although six of those were quarantine. But, you know, we've had 8 or 9 good days prep and we're ready to go.
So what are you most looking forward to about the World Cup?
I suppose the games, just looking forward to seeing the lads express themselves and the skill set that they've got, whatever that might be. It's very different from being a player to now being a coach. You kind of just have to prepare the guys as best as possible, give them what they want and what they need going into the tournament. And yeah, I suppose the coach's work's near enough done in that prep phase. And now looking forward really just to seeing the lads go about their business.
Okay, well, hopefully they will achieve all the goals that they have set, and wish everybody the best of luck. Thank you so much.
No, thanks very much. Thanks a lot for having me.
Great to get that insight from Gary there. Alan, his comments on Paul Sterling really stood out to me. We know how crucial he is, but the way he's putting it is that if he has a good tournament, Ireland could go far.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Like, Paul Sterling is one of the best batsmen in this format of the game in the world. Make no bones about that. And again, it's quite funny, even for us as watchers, sometimes we're actually nearly happier if Ireland get over the line and Sterlo hasn't performed. That might sound actually very stupid, but you know, there's so much pressure on him, but he's such an easygoing guy. He's such a deep thinker. He's fantastic to talk about cricket too. He thinks about it deeply. He wants to do so well. He wants Ireland to do so well. And often sometimes his demeanour sometimes doesn't show that, but he cares deeply. He's a great guy. He's a brilliant cricketer. And Gary is absolutely 100% right. If Sterling performs, Ireland can go a long way.
It's an awful lot of pressure, but look, I guess there's pressure on them all, even though they're probably trying to avoid it as much as they can. Although I'd say when you're in the bubble and you're just in your room all the time, it's impossible not to be thinking about it. But when it comes to these really major tournaments, when the whole of the country is turning their eyes to cricket, because they're not doing it all the time, but they are really focused, laser focused on it then, how difficult is it to deal with that pressure as well?
It's really difficult, obviously, to deal with pressure. But I think as a batsman, at least if you miss it, as long as you're not bowled, you've got the next ball. As a bowler, sometimes if things start going wrong, you know, the walls can start closing in, or it can feel like a very small stadium. So I think bowlers a lot of the time actually have a lot more pressure on their shoulders, because, you know, they kind of have, they're the ones who are initially doing something. The batter just has to react to what they do, and they can kind of guess as well based on fields. So I think that the death bowling from Young, from Adair, from Little, whoever it is that's going to be in the mix at that point, is going to be high pressure, because they're going to probably have to bowl 3 or 4 of the last overs in the game. And we've seen they've struggled a little bit. You know, Adair has been a little bit predictable sometimes. He's got to figure out his best mix in slower balls and full pace deliveries, Yorkers, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that kind of pressure is huge, and it's going to come down to how well they deal with it. And hopefully, you know, they throw caution to the wind and they just get on with it.
They are hoping to secure a top 2 finish in their group, which would see them progress to the Super 12 stage of the tournament. They're probably not going to say it out loud, because we know the way sports people are. You know, it's each game at its time and see what happens. First up, Alan, is the Netherlands. They did beat Ireland this summer. Do you think that's going to be on their minds? It didn't happen that, like, it was only a little while ago.
Probably not, because this is a different type of tournament. And again, you know, when you're on the world stage, it is different. And Ireland, and Paul Sterling alluded to that in his previous interview, you know, they've been there and done that, and it's a question of flipping the coin. Are they actually going to be really up for the game? That's the most important thing for me from an Irish point of view, because they have the experience. And again, they have the players capable of winning the game, but this Dutch side cannot be underestimated in any shape or form. Some high quality cricketers right throughout the team. Ireland are well capable of beating them, there's no doubt about that, but it's a very tough group. You know, obviously Sri Lanka didn't play very well against England in the summer. They actually terribly disappointed me. And Namibia have been emerging. They've won 2 of the warm-up games against UAE and Scotland. So it's going to be a tough group, and you've got to be on song. We need certainly two wins to get through. But the team is very well capable of doing it.
Isabel, do they target certain games or do they just go out and try and win what they can?
Well, they'd win at 2 out of 3. So I think they'll be aiming to win the first two because then at least they don't have to worry about the third. Netherlands, I think, is a totally different prospect to what was going on during the summer in the one day years that were in Netherlands, not great wickets. But they have a few players coming in. Ryan Tendiscata is playing his last tournament on the world stage. And in fact, he's retiring from all professional cricket at the end of this year. So he'll be wanting to put in a big performance. And luckily, he's not bowling anymore, so we don't have to worry about that. But he's a really canny operator. But if they can get that win the first game, they'll definitely be hoping to turn Sri Lanka over, who, you know, they can be absolutely unbelievable, but they can equally just completely fall apart. And if Ireland can get in front kind of in the first quarter of that match, then we might see them win their first two matches and not worry about the third.
It's going to be really hot, as we might have mentioned a few times already in these podcasts, but it is, and there's no getting away from it. And we know Sri Lanka have a lot of spin bowlers. How difficult is this going to prove for Ireland?
Well, it's the difficulty in all T20 cricket. It's, you know, in essence, most of the T20 cricket I watch around the world is who are the best players of spin. And again, there's so many good spinners right around the tournament, and often the best teams play three spinners. That's why it's something that I have thought about in terms of the makeup of our own team. Will three play? The general view is maybe not. I would question that because I kind of think that, you know, McBrien, Singh and White, who's possibly going to force his way into the team, potentially for me, should play. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that. And, you know, the adaption, as you say, the shot-making ability and the risks that Isabel took, that's what this format allows you to do. But you've got to be canny. You've got to think of the areas where it's more risk-free, like areas over point and long off, over extra cover. There's 60 metres there. It's a very difficult shot to play against high-quality spin. But there are the areas. Obviously, most people look to go square of the wicket and clear the ropes, you know, with big, big shots square of the wicket. So you've got to try and work those things out. And you alluded to it earlier, Marie, these sorts of discussions with your batting coach and the coach in general about hitting areas when we're talking about hitting fours and sixes.
Before we finish up, I just wanted to mention, Isabel, the positive news that 5 players are going to be involved in the Abu Dhabi T10 League in November. So Sterling, Adair, Camphor, Little are going to play and O'Brien is going to coach. How valuable is it for Ireland to have players experiencing the playing and training with some of the world's best white ball cricketers?
It's a very difficult proposition going and playing abroad in a team. You know, it might seem kind of strange to say, but when you get selected for the Irish team, everyone's looking after you. Everyone is pulling for you to do well. When you get picked up in an opposition team, especially as an overseas, you're expected to perform, and that is just it. If you don't perform, you're cut and you're not getting back. So it can be really, really difficult. And that's absolutely invaluable for these players. At the same time, having done it a little bit myself, you know, you have that freedom. You kind of go, well, I either come off or I don't. There's no point in worrying about it and poking about the place. You really go after the ball. So especially for the likes of Little, you know, it's massive for him. And, you know, meeting different coaches and different players, you learn so much from them. So I think it's huge. And I really hope that we see them go into other tournaments around the world and get picked up. And I think we will.
Alan?
Couldn't agree more. I think more it's being around the environment of some of these top quality players in these types of tournaments, and particularly if and when you can perform and you gain a recognition of your own. And Isabel is right. You've nothing to fear, you know, but for Irish players of this number to be in tournaments like this, and if it can grow and expand, Josh Little, I think, is going to be box office in this because, you know, he's proved in international level. He doesn't really get that terribly overawed about things. He doesn't fuss about things. He's uncomplicated and he's just got better and better as time has gone on. But it's a great opportunity. It's something they will absolutely adore. There's no doubt about that. And to be, as you say, around some of the best players in the world and eating and learning and feeling everything that they do, you just, all you want to do is want it.
Well, first of all, they have the small matter of the World Cup. Isabel, prediction?
I think they'll make it through. I really do. Especially if we see Balbirnie or Kevin O'Brien come to the table.
Netherlands game, hugely important. If we get over the line in that, I would be backing Isabel 100%.
Right. Well, it is not that far away and everyone is really looking forward to it. Thank you, Isabel and Alan, for joining me again. It is time now for us, lucky us, just to sit back and enjoy the action for fans watching the game. Do keep an eye out on television when Ireland's Call is played. There will be a very special treat. I'm going to say no more. Just watch out for it. I hope everybody enjoyed listening. Please do subscribe.